Hey, Kalamazoo, it's Tuesday night, and it is 7-ish. Hey, what can I say? The roads are bad. And if you're out listening to us in a car, be careful out there. We speak from experience. And anyway, the Audio Beach is on the air. And every Tuesday night, we come on and do a show that's all about the movies, what's happening in the movies, what's happening on DVD, and we play music from the movies. And this week's no different. I'm in the studio with Zach and Ben.
Hi there.
And we're talking all about what's happening this past weekend. And last week, Hannah Montana totally ruled the box office with smash opening Super Bowl weekend. And it was supposed to be a one-week-only run. Disney had strategically put that out like, oh, well, one-week-only. And miraculously, after a, well, they have 28 million dollar opening weekend. They
31.
That's right. They extended the run to an extra week. And
it's kind of disingenuous. It's like, oh, you want me to do an encore? Well, I'll come right back out. I wasn't planning on doing another song.
I didn't have a song ready.
It's true, but I and they did well this weekend, but they weren't counting on the, I think, romantic nature of the impending Valentine's Day holiday. Fool's gold.
Either that or maybe Hannah Montana's audience has actually run dry. maybe every person out there who wanted to see her saw her in concert or in theaters.
I will say she's taken some flack on the internet for scenes of the movie where she's not wearing a seatbelt. I saw that.
Ooh.
Not setting a good example for all the tweenagers out there.
I, for one, encourage her not to wear a seatbelt and to drive recklessly.
Well, so is her dad, apparently, according to the movie. Okay. I haven't seen it. But Fool's Gold opened at number one with $21 million. Ironically enough, 5 years ago, this very weekend, Kate Hudson and Matthew McConaughey ruled the box office with a $23 million opener to How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days.
Huh.
So this must be their weekend, the pre-Valentine's Day.
So in 5 years, we can see them reuniting again.
It's true.
It doesn't seem that their charm is appreciating, though. It's going down a little bit.
Yeah, especially in... Oh, it's tough economic times.
5 years from now, we'll see them, you know...
19 million opening?
Yep.
Well, they still open at number one. Fool's Gold was the hit of the weekend. Trailing behind was $60 million. Welcome Home, Roscoe Jenkins from Universal Pictures. Hannah Montana, which was number one last week, drops to number three. The next one is The Eye with Jessica Alba's horror thriller.
Yeah, remake of a Hong Kong horror film.
Go figure.
$6 million. And this was neck and neck right here. Juno and 27 Dresses were duking it out to the last minute for the number five slot. And that prize goes to actually Juno, who again, for like I think the third straight week, jumps up in the top 10. Yeah.
It seems to be the only Best Picture nominee people actually want to see.
It's true. It's climbing up. Made $5 million, adds to its total, 117. I'm sure as we get closer to Oscars, which are actually, I think, now officially happening, I saw banner ads for them on the internet today.
Yeah, the on a kind of unrelated note from the box office returns, the writer's strike has kind of come to a semi-official end this week with the tentative deal being made and just waiting for ratification. In fact, writers are supposed to go to work as early as tomorrow, from what I understand.
Yeah. I know a lot of places in Hollywood are ramping up. But, you know, watch out for that actor strike this summer.
Well, you can make stuff without actors. You just need writers, right? Isn't that the way it works?
Or, I don't know.
Or does it work the other way around?
They got the CGI and the ILMs lately. 27 Dresses number 6, Bucket List number 7, Rambo drops number 8. It's quickly sinking. But not as fast as Meet the Spartans, it drops number 9. And staying in its number 10 slot is another Oscar contender, There Will Be Blood. And it's a total at this point of $26 million. That makes it Anderson's it surpassed Boogie Nights this weekend to make it its most financially successful picture to date.
It drinks the others' milkshakes. Is that what you're
saying?
Okay, well, as we mentioned before, the Academy Awards are coming up, which means it's time once again for our Academy Awards build-up. There's our theme. And awesome. This week we're taking a look at another Academy Award nominated composer for Best Original Score. This week it's James Newton Howard, a very prolific composer who's had several years worth of work. This year he's nominated for Michael Clayton. Yes, Michael Clayton. Sorry about that. Also a Best Picture nominee among other nominations it's garnered. He also had a few other movies this past year, which we're going to listen to a few selections from those just to give a comparison. And he's a busy guy. This year he's got Batman, among a few others, coming up. So without further ado, here's a selection from Michael Clayton by Academy Award nominee James Newton Howard. We're back, and that was a selection from James Newton Howard's score for Michael Clayton, nominated for an Academy Award. And speaking of the Academy Awards, it's time for our screen test trivia question for the evening, which deals with said award show. You know, the writer's strike is semi-officially over as of this week, which means the Academy Awards can proceed as scheduled on February 24th. In their complete 80-year history, the Academy Awards have never once been totally canceled, but they have been pushed back a few times and rescheduled. The last time that happened was 1980, which, you know, was also the same year that old Johnny Williams got nominated for his score to The Empire Strikes Back, if you're, in case you're wondering why I'm playing Yoda's theme right here. But our question for you tonight, why in 1980 were the Academy Awards rescheduled? There was a specific event that forced them to be pushed back. Our question for you tonight, what was that event?
I thought you were playing Yoda's theme because of the announcement yesterday that Star Wars is returning to theaters.
You mean that the Clone Wars animated series is going to premiere in theaters?
This September? Yeah, that's what I thought.
I might have had ulterior motives also for doing that.
All right, well, I have an idea about this trivia question.
Okay, well, hopefully you out there in the listening public have an idea, too. If you don't, stay tuned. We'll give you the answer before the end of the show. Up next, another track from Michael Clayton. That was Academy Award nominee James Newton Howard with a selection from his score to Michael Clayton. We'll be talking more about Michael Clayton later in the show, but now it's time to look at what's opening the theaters this upcoming weekend. And since it is Valentine's Day weekend, or President's Day weekend, depending upon your romantic persuasion, if you love the president more than your girl, it is... We've got quite a few releases opening on Thursday, actually, instead of the traditional Friday releases. And starting off the list is Jumper. Mace Windu and Darth Vader get a rematch in Jumper, which stars Hayden Christensen as a young man with the ability to teleport, or jump, instantaneously from place to place, and Samuel L. Jackson as part of the Paladins, a mysterious cabal determined to stop anyone with such talents. The discovery of his power plunges the young man into the war between the Jumpers and the Paladins that has raged for centuries. It's based on the 1992 science fiction novel by author Stephen Gould. Jumper is directed by Doug Liman and written by David S. Goyer. And if box office results pan out, it could be part of a planned trilogy. Rachel Bilson, Jamie Bell, and Anna Sophia Robb co-star Jumper is rated PG-13.
Everything you loved about Nightcrawler, but with Hayden Christensen.
Yeah, it's like Nightcrawler and Darth Vader combined.
If it weren't for the writer and directing team of this, I'd think it could be a total, complete dud.
Yeah, Doug Liman, of course, but, yeah. Director of the first in the Bourne series, and David S. Goyer, known for such things as Batman Begins.
Yeah.
Yeah, good pedigree. I don't know, internet buzz on this is not so hot, but I'm looking, I kind of looking forward to it. I think it's kinda, it's a cool premise, good, some good people attached to it.
Plus, it's nice to have what's kind of an event movie in the middle of the doldrums of February.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's got that cool poster.
It's true. Plus, I like the way it's advertising itself as President's Day weekend. Lonely nerds, don't feel bad. Come out President's Day weekend.
Yeah.
Honor the president. Okay, our next movie is also got somewhat of a nerdish pedigree. It is the Spiderwick Chronicles.
Little nerds?
Yeah, little nerds. Based on the popular series of children's book by Tony Ditterlizzi and Holly Black, Spiderwick tells the story of the Grace children, twins Simon and Jared, both played by Freddie Highmore, and their sister Mallory.
Twins.
Yes, twins. It's kind of like the it's kind of like the Parent Trap, where they've got one actor playing both roles.
Yeah.
Yes, the Grace children find their great uncle's mysterious book, Arthur Spiderwick's Field Guide, after moving into his stately old manor home in New England. Mysterious accidents plague the family in their new home, and it's not until they discover the secrets of the guide that they find out the real cause. A fantastical world of fairies, goblins, brownies, trolls, and other fantastical creatures, both good and evil. Mary Louise Parker and David Strathairn co-star with the voices of Nick Nolte, Seth Rogen, and Martin Short, providing vocal work for the creatures. It's rated PG.
And stars Nick Nolte? That's weird.
Nick Nolte is the voice of one of the monsters. I understand he needed very little, computer-generated enhancement.
Did he know he was in the movie?
That's what I was laughing about.
He just showed up and started mumbling monstrous things, and like, you're hired.
I just walked around, and I followed him with a microphone for a week.
You know, you guys can guffaw about this movie all you want, though, but I think it looks kind of cool. Phil Tippett's effects company worked on the movie, and the effects at least looked pretty cool. I got to see some of the rough stuff when we were in San Diego this past year.
Perhaps if Bridge to Terabithia never came out, I would actually have some inkling to see this, but it just looks very similar, at least in tone and style.
Burned on that. Bridge to Terabithia, not as advertised.
Bridge to Terabithia, in fact, a story with very few fantasy elements about a child dealing with mortality. This one, from what I understand, full-on this, fantasy.
This really, when you watch it, really strikes you as like Diet, or the kids' version of Pan's Labyrinth, for some reason.
I thought Pan's Labyrinth was the kids' version of Pan's Labyrinth.
Have you seen Pan's Labyrinth?
Yeah, maybe I shouldn't be babysitting anyone.
Yeah, don't. Do not show Pan's Labyrinth to anyone under 13.
I'm just a little tired of the whole lone child with a...
He's not alone, though. He's got his twin brother.
A small group of children, or whatever you want, that have their in some fantastical world. That no one else can see.
You think it's all pretty much derivative of the Pagemaster?
I wasn't going to say it.
Okay, our next movie is...
Oh, can I just point out one real quick?
Go ahead.
If you go out to see the Spider-Man
Chronicles... Yeah, that it's also available in IMAX?
Or that it also will feature on the front of it.
How can I forget to mention this one?
The trailer debut of Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of Crystal Skull, which if you don't want to go check out, Spiderwick Chronicles will debut.
Like me.
Will be debuting on Yahoo Movies and the official Indiana Jones site on Thursday morning.
And Good Morning America between 8 and 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
First.
I wasn't going to say it.
I know, but... Eh.
Well, our
if you want to see it on the big screen, Spiderwick Chronicles.
Yes.
Or the bigger screen.
Our next movie is definitely Maybe. Ryan Reynolds stars as a single father whose daughter, played by Academy Award nominee Abigail Breslin, takes a...
she's going to be milking that for another 60 years.
Yes. She takes a persistent interest in her father's love life, in particular, the identity of the lady he knocked up to produce her. Instead of going on Springer...
It's backwards, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Instead of going on Springer, she has him tell her a bedtime story to discover which one of her daddy's multiple sexual partners, including Elizabeth Banks, Rachel Weisz, or Isla Fisher, is the baby mama, and in the process discovering that there is no male term for hobag, no female term for bastard, and that daddy should probably go to the free clinic for some testing. Definitely Maybe is rated PG-13.
I think you summed that one up there.
All right. Well, we've got one last movie to talk about, opening this Valentine's Day or President's Day weekend, depending on your persuasion. This last one is Step Up 2, The Streets. Yes, another entry in the ever-increasing genre of B-boy dance movies, which at one point only included Break-In and Break-In 2 Electric Boogaloo, but now sees a new movie about every other week. Step Up 2, The Streets follows up 2006's original with another story of a freestyle street dancer who enrolls in the Maryland School for the Arts, but is concerned about losing her street cred in the process. This time the street dancer is a girl, making it totally different from the first one. Struggling to balance her old life with her new one, she forms a crew at the school to compete in the biggest street dance competition in Baltimore, or as I like to call it, B-more. The choreographers from both Stomp the Yard and Bring It On worked on this movie, so hypothetically this movie would both bring it and stomp it, but sadly not serve it. Step Up 2, The Streets is rated PG-13.
You know what I say to that?
What's that?
Get me Honey Daniels.
I'm going to ask you gentlemen to remind me in 5 months that this came out in the theaters when the DVD release comes out and I put it on the was this in theaters category.
I'll make a note in the
or potentially the direct-to-DVD category.
I think we're going to be surprised at how much money this actually
raised. Yeah, this actually will make
First one was the surprise.
Remember when Stomp the Yard made so much money and we're like what the heck is Stomp the Yard?
Yeah. Didn't the original one come out? What was the original one called? Yeah, okay, thank you.
Step Up 1, the
there's
original.
There's so many possible original titles in there. That came out at number one, didn't it?
There's so many of these coming out, I fear that the makers of Meet the Spartans is going to make a...
Step movie.
It up and stomp on it or some.
The kids, they love the silly street dancing nowadays. It's as though break dancing never left.
Yeah.
Well, it didn't.
Don't call it comeback.
Oh, yeah.
It's been here for years.
It never left.
Don't illegitimize my 1992 to right now.
Okay, well, more from James Newton Howard and his score for Michael Clayton, and then we'll return with this week's DVD releases. You're listening to Audio Bijou on 89.1 in Kalamazoo. That was some more of James Newton Howard's Academy Award nominated score for Michael Clayton. Every Tuesday, new DVD releases are put out, and for that, we go to Ben.
Someday there will be no DVD releases put out, but not this week. This week we've got some fairly big releases with Gone Baby Gone. If you want to see Best Supporting Actress nominee.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember her name right now. I'm sorry.
Just move on.
Okay. We Own the Night with Joaquin Phoenix and Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah, that was a Cannes Film Festival official selection.
Yep. Becoming Jane with Anne Hathaway and James McAvoy. We've also got No Reservations with Catherine Zeta-Jones, Aaron Eckhart, and Academy Award-nominated Abigail Breslin. Martian Child with John Cusack.
Or is that
Zach
like
likes to call it K-Pax 2.
Yes. K-Pax, son of K-Pax. K-Paxer.
Romance
the Quickening.
We've also got Romance and Cigarettes with Steve Buscemi and James Gandolfini. And Tyler Perry's Why Did I Get Married? Moving on. I've also got my new category, was that in theaters?
Ooh, I love this game.
Do you?
Yes.
The first one I'm pretty sure was, but I put it in here anyway. The Amateurs, with Jeff Bridges, Tim Blake Nelson, Joe Pantoliano, and William Fichtner.
Yes, it was, limitedly. It's about a group of small-town guys who shoot a porno.
Yeah. I'm glad you knew that.
Well, you know, it's my business to know when the new releases come out. That's what this show is about, man.
The other was that in theaters release. It was Dedication with Mandy Moore and Billy Crudup.
Ooh, that's tougher.
I don't think that was.
Yeah, I'm going to say no.
Yeah. In the direct-to-DVD category, meaning movies that actually weren't on the was that in theaters category.
Movies
they were so
good.
So bad that I know they weren't.
So good they bypassed the theaters completely.
Yep. I Could Never Be Your Woman. That's a movie.
Isn't that the one with Michelle
it
Pfeiffer?
It is, the Michelle Pfeiffer and Paul Rudd, directed by Amy Heckerling of Clueless and Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
What is the world we live in that's going direct to DVD?
I know.
They thought nobody would shell out the $8 to go see that?
Yeah, that's got quite the pedigree.
And that Michelle Pfeiffer, despite being, I believe, 75 years old, is still quite a looker.
Not ever confused for a movie that would have been in the theaters. Three Can Play That Game. The follow-up to Two Can Play That Game with Vivica A. Fox returning. In the classic and reissue, we've got Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, 40th Anniversary Special Edition. Zapped! Exclamation
oh,
point.
I'm always confused. Is Zapped before their pairing for Charles in Charge or after?
Before.
So it's
Charles in Charge was the triumphant
like
reteaming of Scott Baio and Buddy.
Man.
Whatever that dude.
So you
is.
Get a preview of stuff to come.
Uh-huh.
You know he now plays like Bible Man in direct to DVD Christian videos?
Yeah, I did hear that. He should
not
team
Scott
up with,
Baio, obviously, but
he should team up with Kirk Cameron.
Yep. We've also got The Wiz 30th anniversary special edition.
You know, that was actually nominated for a few Academy Awards.
Yeah, well, it was directed by Sidney Lumet, isn't it? Or no.
You know what's a really funny title when you think about the Yellow Brick Road?
The Wiz. Yeah, I know.
Hee.
And we've also got Charlie Chan Collection Volume 4. And on TV and DVD, we've got Family Ties Season 3, The Equalizer Season 1, Blade, the entire series, Dallas Season 8, Girlfriends Season 3, and the cartoon George of the Jungle, the complete series.
What happened with Blade the series?
Well, it's fitting on one entire series collection.
Okay, Michael Clayton for you, and then we'll return to talk about Michael Clayton. In case you missed it before, here's another chance at tonight's screen test trivia question. For tonight, we're talking about the Academy Awards as we build up for February 24th, now the confirmed evening for the Oscars ceremony. The writer's strike is essentially over this week, and due to that, the Academy Awards can go on as planned. To date, in its 80-year history, the Academy Awards have never been canceled. They have, however, been postponed and rescheduled a couple of times, the most recent of which was in 1980. And for tonight's question, we ask you, what event triggered the rescheduling of the Academy Awards in 1980? It was a good year. It was the year that John Williams was nominated for Best Original Score for The Empire Strikes Back. And unfortunately, he had to wait an extra day to find out whether or not he'd won. We're going to tell you why before the end of the show, so give it some thought. Up next, we're going to revisit an Academy Award nominee for Best Picture, Michael Clayton, and speaking of which, here's some of the music from that particular film. Just a couple short weeks away from the Academy Awards happening on February 24th, and as we build up to the ceremony, we're taking a look back at some of the pictures that were nominated this year for the Best Movie of the Year, and this week we're going to take a second look at Michael Clayton, just finishing up a re-release in theaters and due on DVD next week. Michael Clayton is from director-writer Thomas Gilroy and actor-producer George Clooney, who team up to create the intricate character study of Michael Clayton, a lawyer caught in a moral gray zone when one of his firm's most talented lawyers seems to have gone off the deep end in the midst of a high-profile case. Charged with bringing the rogue corporate attorney in line before the massive settlement payday, Clayton discovers just how morally compromised he himself has become by discovering the deep-rooted corruption in the client his firm defends. Tilda Swinton and Tom Wilkinson co-star in this, and Tilda Swinton happens to be nominated for Best Supporting Actress for her portrayal in this movie. It's kind of facing a uphill battle when it comes to actually winning when it comes to February 24th. Historically, the awards ceremonies that lead up to the Academy Awards are kind of a, preview of who's going to win, and so far Michael Clayton has not been the title to sweep any of the previous awards like the SAGs or the BAFTAs or any of the others.
Or
that
win
give us
any kinda, of those at all,
yeah,
as far as I've
yeah, which
reading.
I think it's kind of sad because out of all the Best Picture nominees, I gotta say, I think it's the Best Picture.
This is my choice for what is Best Picture as well. I don't think it's going to win, but I know you feel like it could be a potential crash.
Perhaps. I mean,
surprise winner.
It's one of the ones that's one of the only ones, I think, that's got a traditional story structure. It's built upon the premise of, you know, the thriller, but it's done just so much more intricately and, you know, maturely that it elevates itself to Best Picture status.
Well, and unlike the other Best Picture nominees, I mean, I personally feel it's the only one that's satisfying from beginning to end.
Exactly.
It sets you up for a good ending, and it gives you one.
But, you know, I think I know why it hasn't garnered the attention of some of the other ones, and I think it's because it doesn't feature the showy, grandstanding performances that, say, you've got in There Will Be Blood or No Country for Old Men. And I think it's kind of disappointing because if you look at those two movies, they kind of have this kind of glorification of these larger-than-life evil characters that, you know, almost approach the level of, like, Snidely Whiplash or your comic supervillain, almost, you know? You look at Javier Bardem's performance, and he might as well be, you know, Jason in a Friday the 13th movie. And you look at Daniel Day-Lewis, and he might as well be twisting that Magnum P.I. mustache he grew in there.
Well, I mean, you look at between George Clooney and Daniel Day-Lewis, who's really stretching themselves more in the character they portray and the way they portray it? Well, I mean, we've seen Daniel Day-Lewis go over the top. We've seen him do, like, the raging, on the verge of lunacy character. And then we've not really seen George Clooney do an understated, very flawed character as much as he is in Michael Clayton.
And it takes a lot of talent to take that character and pursue them so completely and to do something that's not necessarily, you know, loud and over the top and still make it interesting. And beyond that, what I really like about this movie is the portrayal of evil in it is not this loud, over-the-top thing. It's almost portraying the banality of evil. Evil is not some big villain. It's just people making the easy choice to weasel out of things. It's not even going and doing something horribly bad. It's saying, yup.
That's another good contrast
There's a great scene where Tilda Swinton's character decides to go ahead with a horrible cover-up that will result in the death of a character, and she's so nervous about it and so, like, kind of half-hearted in her endorsement of it that it just shows you that evil is not, you know, the big monsters. It's regular people making bad choices.
Well, look at the murder scenes between There Will Be Blood, No Country for Old Men, and Michael Clayton. Which one was creepier?
Exactly.
The loud, the extremely violent, or the quiet and, like, flawless?
Yeah, exactly. Ugh. Well, and, you know, even though they're not depicted on screen, which movie results in more people's lives being ruined?
Yeah. I mean,
it's just such a more deep and complex movie than the other two, which are really kind of showy and nihilistic, that it's really a disappointment that it's not receiving. I mean, obviously, it's received some accolades because a lot of people like it and it got nominated, but it's sad that, from what indications seem to be, that it won't win anything.
Yeah. If we had our druthers,
yes,
it'll be 100%. Going
online. Speaking of our druthers, if you're still at a loss for what to do for Valentine's Day, we've got our recommendations coming up. But first, some more of that Academy Award-nominated score for Michael Clayton.
Thank you.
That was some more of James Newton Howard's interesting and tonal score for Michael Clayton, the Academy Award nominee for Best Picture and Best Original Score. We're going to listen to some different music that he did this past year, including some stuff that maybe should have been nominated coming up. But first, it's 2 days before Valentine's Day, and if you're still wondering what to do, there's plenty of time left to add something to that Netflix queue or take a run down to the video store to check out a movie to get you and your special someone in the mood for love. And we're going to give you our selections for what to do when, you know, you're looking for that special romantic movie.
Well, if you're like me, you're going to cozy up with your sweetie on Valentine's Day. And just watch the Indiana Jones and Kingdom of the Crystal Skulls trailer on repeat on the internet.
Non-stop.
Yeah, I mean, what could be more romantic than that? No, perhaps a few movies. I think, for me, I might want to go with a classic. No, you can't lose with this one, The Princess Bride.
That was one of my potential.
If you take a listen to our Ved Music, of course, it's the obvious choice.
I thought
guys love
that.
It, girls love
I'd
it.
I say that first so one. I could steal it from Zach and Ben.
Yep,
and well, claim it as my own.
Since you stole that from me, I'm going to say another fallback for me always is Say Anything, which you know, any guy should be able to appreciate as well.
Any guy can love that one. You'd love the Lloyd Dobler, and the ladies
you
love
the Lloyd Dobler.
Say Anything.
I'm gonna go out on a limb. It's a movie that doesn't get the attention it deserves maybe lately, but once upon a time, it garnered an Academy Award for one Cher, and it is Moonstruck. If you're turned off by the idea of Cher, she's actually really good in this movie. It's before she kind of went under the knife and made herself into kind of a freakish monster. She's got a really good performance in it, and what I love about this movie is that it depicts love in multiple forms, not only like intense passion, but old established, you know, I've seen you on the toilet love.
In a complete opposite of that, I'm just going to throw out this one out for Mike Ireland, who's standing by for his Blues Power up next. He's going totally old school, classic Hollywood romance. We'll always have Paris, Casablanca. I have to agree with it. That is an awesome movie. It's great for guys. Got action, thriller, and romance.
Yeah, awesome any day of the year, but nice for the romance on Valentine's Day.
And here, let me just... this is kind of an obscure choice for me, but one I did watch on Valentine's Day. And let me just say to all you guys out there, the lady I watched this movie with is now my wife.
Oh, no.
It's one I picked up a video star I didn't know anything about. It's an obscure little independent picture. It's called Next Stop Wonderland, and it's a romantic story about two people and fate. And I just picked it up on a whim, and we watched it that week, and it blew me away.
Well,
it was good.
One last pick for me. It's an obvious choice, of course, but you know, romantic comedies often don't get the comedy part right. When Harry Met Sally is both romantic and funny.
So yeah, but, I mean that's the ultimate romantic comedy. I don't. I think it was a little too bittersweet for Valentine's Day for me on that one, but...
Ben, your final word on Valentine's Day movies?
I'm just sticking with Say Anything.
Okay. Well, that's our tips for how to heat up this Thursday. Next, another selection from James Newton Howard.
Didn't mention The Notebook. He watches it so often.
It makes me cry too much, all right? this one's from another Academy Award nominee, but it didn't get nominated for Best Score. It's Charlie Wilson's War, which shows a little bit of how James Newton Howard is very prolific and can stretch himself. James Newton Howard doing a little bit of the Middle Eastern thing for Charlie Wilson's War, what didn't get nominated for Best Original Score, but I think is a little bit better than his score for Michael Clayton, just because it's a little bit more traditional. But everyone is entitled to their taste, I guess. Now it's time for the answer to tonight's screen test trivia question. And for this week, we asked you, the writer's strike being essentially over means the Academy Awards can now go on as planned February 24th, meaning that once again, they continue their 80-year streak of having never been canceled. But they have been moved around a couple times, including in 1980, the year that Fame was nominated for Best Original Song.
It's going to live forever.
Yes, it is. What was the reason the 1980 Academy Awards got pushed back?
My guess has got to be something political.
That's what I was
and
thinking.
Maybe it has to do with the 1980 presidential election or some sort of crazy international incident.
I was thinking about something involving Ronald Reagan.
It actually does entail Mr. Ronald Reagan.
It wasn't there wasn't an assassination attempt near there, was it?
It was okay. The assassination attempt of Ronald Reagan by Mr. John Hinckley, somebody who was perhaps seeking some fame of his own but got some infamy. In respect to the former actor-turned-president, the Academy Awards were pushed back one day to March 31st, and sadly, the Gipper never won the Oscar himself.
And
he was so close.
Hinckley never won the heart of one Jodie Foster.
It's true, although she has won an Academy Award. Well, that does it for us here on the Audio Bijou tonight. We're going to take you out with one last song by James Newton Howard. This one is going to be from The Lookout, one of my favorite scores for this past year. And be sure and stay tuned. Blues Power with Mike Ireland's up next. The best 2 hours of blues are here in Kalamazoo. And if you missed any part of our show or want to catch a previous show, make sure you check out our podcast. You can find it on our website. Go to wider.org for the links, or just Google search Audio Bijou. Thanks for listening. Here it is, To Be Forgiven from The Lookout.